13th of November 2016 at Radha Radhanath Temple in Durban, South Africa. So I think since we all recited chapter 12, why don't we study chapter 12? What do you say? Would you like to understand better what we just recited? Yes. What do you think? Is that all right?
Yes.
It's one of my favorite chapters. Had I known you were going to do that, I have a whole presentation on chapter 12. But anyway, I didn't know. So in the beginning of chapter 12, Arjuna asks a question. Can I have some water? Is that possible? In the beginning of chapter 12, Arjuna asks a question. He said, what's better, Krishna? Those who are engaged in worshiping you, or those who first try to find avyakta, the unmanifested? So this is often a real question for devotees, or those interested in spiritual life. Many times people think, well, first I have to become free from material contamination. Then I can think about Krishna. Because if I think about Krishna before I'm free of material contamination, I may think of him wrongly, or I may make some... Oh, thank you. Is there a cup? Okay. I may make some mistake. And then they go, well, how am I going to get free from contamination? I guess I'll first have to realize that I'm a soul. I'll have to realize Brahman. I'll have to realize my eternal nature, be equipoised, and then I can worship Krishna. Technically speaking, the term for this is Jnana Yoga or Jnana Nidra Bhakti, where one is thinking that one has to first become liberated and then one can worship the Lord. Now, it makes a little bit of sense because many times Krishna will say that bhakti begins after liberation. Right? Brahma Bhutta Prasadatmana Sarchatina Kanchati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhakti Mabhutadara. Prabhupada will many times say that after liberation is when bhakti really begins. So let's get liberated first and then do bhakti. Right? That has some logic to it. Now, Krishna's response to this is, it's better to just fix your mind on me. He uses the word mano, or me. Always, avesha, manaha, mine, ye, mam, nitya, always, yukta, engaged. Those who always think about me, Krishna says, that's the best thing. That's the most perfect. Now, you might ask, why is fixing our mind upon Krishna in a personal form the most perfect kind of spiritual life? Is that a reasonable question? Yes. And the answer to that is that the ultimate reality, as Krishna explained in the 7th chapter, by the way, children, don't bother me. You don't have to take out children just because they're being children. You can stay. You can stay. You don't want to stay. Okay. Krishna explains Mataparitram Nanya Kinchidasti Janandaya. He said, there's no higher truth than me. And in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, it says, Brahmeti Paramatmiti Bhagavaniti Sabdute. The highest manifestation of truth is the person Bhagavan. Now, logically, that makes sense, doesn't it? That the highest ultimate manifestation would be most complete. Highest manifestation would contain both personal and impersonal aspects as Bhagavan. And if we want to be, what does it mean to be enlightened, to be perfect? It means to be in harmony with the truth, to see the truth. Tadvadarshi. So he said, those who go right to that, those who immediately think of me, are the most perfect. And then he says, well, if you do the other, if you're going to use this whole description. If you're going to worship the unmanifested, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed, and immovable, and do nice to everybody. Very important theme in the Bhagavad Gita, you have to be nice to everybody. Everybody. That is, everybody. And you control your senses. He said, eventually, you'll come to the highest platform. And we find this throughout the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavatam, this very broad-minded, non-sectarian view. Although Krishna is saying the bhakti path is the best path, it's the most direct, it's the one I recommend. He said the other paths will also work. So he's saying you can do it that way. But then he says, he said, even though that path will work, it's going to be very troublesome. And Prabhupada explains in this purport why it will be troublesome. He says that you have to experience what he calls the non-perceptual feelings, and I have the vaguest idea what he's talking about, non-perceptual feelings. If you can't perceive them, what are they? My good guess is that what he's talking about is the inner workings of the mind rather than the outer workings of the senses. One has to go within. And one has to basically stop all relationships, all engagements, all attachments. This is a very artificial thing for the soul. We are naturally attached. We naturally have relationships. We naturally have activities. So Krishna says this is going to be very difficult. And then Prabhupada says not only is it difficult because you have to stop everything, but he also says it's difficult because once you succeed in stopping everything, then you have to start being attached to Krishna. So the example I always like to give is that of my nephew. My nephew was a brahmachari. He was raised as a brahmachari, not in our Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition, in his own religion. But he was going to a school where there was no girls and was very strict religious practice. And then when he got to be, 20, 21, he said to his teacher, now I'm ready to marry. And his teacher said, for all these years, you haven't looked at any women, but if I introduce you to a nice girl, you have to look at her. So this is the problem with going through this path. If you say, first I'm going to be liberated, and then I'll meditate on Krishna. Then I'll give my attachment to Krishna. I will hesitate to give my attachment to Krishna, and I will hesitate to meditate on Krishna until I know I'm pure, because I might do something wrong. So Krishna's saying, if you do that, if you take that tact, it will work, he said, but it'll be very troublesome. Because to become pure without meditating on Krishna, you're going to have to stop everything. And then once you've stopped everything, then you've got to start meditating on Krishna. But you've already made everything flat. So it'll be troublesome to achieve, and once you achieve it, it will be troublesome to go to the next step. Why not meditate on Krishna from the beginning, and then you just meditate on Krishna more and more and more and more deeply, instead of trying to meditate on nothing and then adding Krishna. So he says, you can do this, but it will be difficult. Then he says what he recommends. And these verses in Bhagavad Gita are some of the most important verses in this scripture. Chapter 12, text 6 through 9. He says, those who worship me, giving up all their activities unto me, being devoted to me without deviation, engage in devotional service and always meditating upon me, having fixed their minds upon me, O son of Pratham, for them I am the swift deliverer from the ocean of birth and death. So the other path, where we try to liberate ourselves by making everything flat, by making our attachment flat, by just getting our mind into this peaceful place, that's our own effort. Of course, our own effort is always helped by the Lord. But it's our own difficult effort. And when we just meditate on the Lord, He does it. We don't do it. We make the effort to meditate on Him, but He delivers us. We're not delivering ourselves. And this is a huge difference. Would it be okay if everybody, can you, everybody take out your device. We'll just take a minute here to stop. So how is it that Krishna delivers us? How is it that Krishna delivers us? What does this mean? Our entanglement in material life, our conditioned life, our illusion, is all due to the fact that we have willfully turned our attention away from the Lord. That is the whole problem. And if we turn our attention back to the Lord, then the whole problem is solved. You can think of it, this microphone's going in and out. You can think of it just like if a child's all right. There we go. One microphone. And we have a wireless one too. So you think of it, if a child's misbehaving, okay, and you put them in the corner and you say, okay, you have a timeout. You have to go in the corner. So the child can think, all right, let's see, I can get out of the corner this way and that way. When my mother's not looking, then I can, you know. Or the child can just say, Mommy, I'm really sorry. I love you. I shouldn't have hit my little brother over the head with my toy fire truck. I won't do it again. I know that that was really mean. And then she just lets him out of the corner. He doesn't have to try to get out of the corner separately. He doesn't have to try to get out of the corner on his own. See, this idea of becoming liberated first, it's thinking, first I have to find my way out of the corner. And then I can have a relationship with my parents again. No, as soon as you reestablish a relationship with your parents, they're going to take you out of the corner. You don't have to do that separately. It doesn't have to be a separate thing. You can just stay in that corner and reestablish a relationship, and they'll take you by the hand and take you out. So Arjuna said, should I first try to get out of illusion and then have a relationship with you? And Krishna says, you can do that. You can do that. But it's going to be a long, hard, slow process. And it's not a natural process. Or you can just immediately try to have a relationship with me and I'll take you out of the corner. And he talks about how do we have a relationship with him. It's at one time the most simple thing and the most difficult thing. He's saying, always think, fix your mind upon him. A simple thing. Just think about Krishna. It doesn't require any paraphernalia. It doesn't even require this big temple. It doesn't require microphones. It doesn't require anything except some desire to think about Krishna. However, I think all of us who try to think about Krishna all the time find that it's not so easy. Correct? All right. So somebody may have that objection to say, Krishna, you're giving us a very simple process. That all I need to do is reconnect with you and think of you, and all my other problems will be gone. But I'm finding it hard to think of you and reconnect with you. So what do I do? So now he gives, as I said, this is very important verses. He says, just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live with me always without a doubt. So he's talking about on the subtle platform. A change in our consciousness. He's saying, fix your mind on me and engage all your intelligence. So engaging our intelligence in Krishna consciousness is a lot of what we're doing here in the Hare Krishna movement. We're talking about the philosophy. We're making all these wonderful programs. We're using our intelligence, how to help ourselves and others connect with Krishna. And fix our mind upon Krishna is very simple. Again, it's a simple concept. That our mind is thinking of the Lord's name, the Lord's form, the Lord's activities, the Lord's qualities, on service to the Lord. But again, we may struggle to do this. Why is it such a struggle to do this? Seems like something should be easy. And Krishna reveals the next verse why it's somewhat of a struggle. He said, if you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, then follow the regular principles of Bhakti Yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So this is a very key verse. Atta chittam samadhatam na shaknokti mahi sridham abhasa yogena tito mam iccha tam dananjaya. Iccha means desire. Means desire. Chittam, your consciousness, your mind, your consciousness. Abhyasa yoga. The reason that we struggle, or some of us at least struggle, with such a simple concept. Fill your mind with the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, the service of the Lord. And if someone says, well, I don't know anything about the Lord, well, we have, you know, this many books. Literally, yes? We stack up more than that. And we're selling them out there. So that's not the problem. The problem isn't that we don't have the information to think about. What we lack is the itch. We lack the desire. Because we naturally think about what is in sync with our desires. He says, develop me as a desire to attain me. A desire to get. Aptum, to get. A desire to get. If you analyze what we do think about, what our consciousness is absorbed in, our consciousness is absorbed in what we want to get, or what we want to keep, that we've already gotten, what we don't want to lose and what we want to acquire. Now, sometimes we're absorbed in what we want to get rid of. And those things that we're absorbed in, what we want to keep, what we want to get, what we want to get rid of, are things that we feel, things, people, activities, creatures, that we are convinced will fulfill us and meet our needs. And you just notice throughout the day, where is our mind and our consciousness going to? How can I protect this? How can I get rid of this? How can I get this? And this may be a good relationship with another person. It may be a particular job. It may be getting something done. It may be an object. But all of those are in the category of this will meet my needs and this will make me happy. Do you think I'm correct with this? So the reason that we struggle so much with such a simple thing has absorbed our minds in the name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, and the service of Krishna is that we don't believe that Krishna is going to meet our needs. We think something else will meet our needs. So even when we're chanting Hare Krishna, we may be thinking of the something else or someone else or whatever that we think will meet our needs. Sort of like if you're talking to somebody that you're not interested in. We've all done this, yes? Someone's talking to us and we haven't the slightest bit of interest in talking to them or hearing what they have to say. And so our minds are someplace else. Recently I was in a place where I was had a super busy schedule. And they asked me, you know, do you want to have your lunch brought to you or do you want to go to people's homes for lunch? And I said, my schedule's already so busy. You know, when you go to somebody's house for lunch, it's always a 3 to 4 or 5 hour thing. And I just don't have time. You know, I'd love to be with these people, but I just don't have time. You're keeping me too busy. So please bring lunch here. So after one program, I was just mobbed by people talking to me. And evidently, one of them asked me if I could come to her house for lunch. But I didn't hear her say that. So I just kind of smiled and went, yes, yes. So we do this sometimes, right? Someone's talking to us, we're with somebody, and we say yes, yes, and we don't know what we're saying yes, yes to. Right? Guy comes home and finds out that his wife has just bought you diamond jewelry. And she said, you said yes. I did. So we may be dealing with Krishna like this. We're seeing the deity. We're in the kirtan. We're reading the scripture. And we're saying, My dear, if you cannot fix your mind, come with it. And our mind is not on what we're saying, and the minute we're finished saying it, we don't know what we said. What did I just say? I don't know. I was thinking about something else. So the problem is we don't have a desire, and we don't have a desire because we're not convinced. We don't have faith. We have faith in something else. We have faith in something, as Krishna says in the 17th chapter. We have faith in something. Everybody has faith in something. We have faith in the latest phone, or we have faith in money, or we have faith in the government, or we have faith in our dog. Or we have faith in something. It is going to fulfill me. So therefore, Krishna says, do abhyas yoga. Abhyas literally means to repeat. And this way you'll get the desire to attain. So another word for abhyas yoga is sadhana. Sadhana yoga, practice yoga. Or we call it sadhana bhakti. And what we're teaching here in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is this sadhana bhakti. How to do practice bhakti. Now, on the one hand, because bhakti and yoga is about a loving connection, which already exists between us and Krishna, and which is natural to the soul, in one hand, it shouldn't be something we have to practice. But unfortunately, because we have been habituated not to understand our actual nature, therefore we have to practice it. Something like a person gets in an accident, and they go into a coma, and when they come out, they have to practice walking over again. They already could walk before they went in the coma, but they forgot. It's still there. The ability to walk is still there, and by practicing, it comes out. Or even in a newborn baby. You know, as soon as the baby is born, if you hold up right after birth, they do what's called an Apgar score, which is where they test different things for the baby. And one of the things they test right after birth, in a few minutes after birth, they hold up the baby, and the baby should put one leg in front of another as soon as you hold them in a standing position, because the propensity to walk is already there in the body of the child. So by practicing, that propensity comes out. So this is our yoga, our bhakti, our relationship with the Lord is already there. It's not something that has to be gained from another source. And when we practice it, it starts to come out. And when it comes out, it makes us happy. It's something like the child. Walking is innate to the child. And when they start practicing to walk, that ability starts to come out. And when it comes out, it makes them happy. If you notice, who's ever watched a child learn how to walk? Who's watched a child? Strange society. Usually everybody raises their hand when asked that question. So children who learn how to walk, they get very excited. Maybe you should watch a video or something, I don't know. Strange artificials. So they get very excited. The little child, they stand up just for a few seconds. Maybe even holding on to something. And they get so excited. The experience itself is the reward. Now, other people also get excited. Mother, father, older brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, grandparents, they also get excited. But the experience of standing up in and of itself is such a reward for that child that they want to do it again. And they want to do it again. They want to do it again until they perfect it. Because it's part of their nature. It's part of how the human body is designed. So it's our nature to be in love with Krishna. It's our nature to have our mind absorbed to Krishna. So if we practice and practice in those moments when we're successful, even if it's just briefly, we end up with an experience. Pratyaksha Bhagavam Dhamma. We end up with an experience. Oh, wow, what is this? This is something beyond the mundane. This is something exciting. And that experience gives us the faith that thinking of Krishna is going to meet our needs, and therefore we want to do more of it. Like the child gets an experience of joy upon standing up or taking a step and thinks, wow, when I master this, I'm going to be able to get across the room very quickly, get to where I want to go very quickly. I'm going to be able to become part of the rest of society. And they're having that experience. So that is the purpose of the yoga, bhakti yoga, the sadhana yoga that we are teaching in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness.
Prabhupada's giving some of the external behaviors in this purport. He says, once you get the guidance of an expert spiritual master, get up early in the morning, take a bath, go to the temple, offer prayers, chant Hare Krishna, collect flowers to offer to the deity, cook food to offer to the deity, take prasadam, and so on. Constantly hear Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam from pure devotees. So Prabhupada's not giving us rituals of some religion. It's not that Prabhupada wants to turn the world into Hinduism, so he's saying, you know, okay, here's all the rituals that you have to follow, and then you'll be this particular religion. No, he's saying that these are the practices that one can do that give us an experience of our original position. And it's that experience that sparks the desire. And that desire should be growing in us. If we're doing sadhana bhakti, that desire to be with Krishna, to think of Krishna, should be growing in us as we experience that Krishna is the only one ever who can meet all of our needs. In fact, he's the only one who ever has met any of our needs. And that he can meet our needs in full, that only the Supreme Lord can meet our needs in full. Then someone may say, well, I don't, and then you'll get to the next verse, right? Then you'll get to the previous verse, that you'll always have your mind fixed on the Lord. Because we'll be convinced, yes, this is what I want to do. But someone may say, well, I don't even have enough faith to take up a spiritual process. You know, I'm curious, maybe there's a God, I have some interest in religion, I have some interest in spirituality, but, you know, something. Then Krishna says, okay, if you're not willing to do a practice that will invoke your desire, in the next verse he says, if you can't do this, abhyasehi, asamartosi, if you can't do this abhyasa yoga, then just try to work for me. Karmani, madkama, madkarma, parma, bhava, madartham api karmani. He's saying, do karma for me. Do something for me. So we also encourage people, do something for the Lord. Clean the temple, weed the garden, give somebody a book about spiritual life, give someone the holy name, offer Krishna your food, give a donation to somebody who's preaching. Do something for the Lord. Now it's interesting, he says, that if you do this, you'll eventually come to perfection. Now how will you come to perfection? You'll come to perfection because by working for God, doing some sort of work for God, again, you'll have an experience. You'll get an experience. You'll feel something. You'll feel, wow, this is really satisfying. This is a lot more satisfying than working for myself. It's a lot more satisfying than working for the government. It's more satisfying than working for an ordinary charity. And then you decide, you know, I think I really want to cultivate this. And as you cultivate this, your experiences will grow. And then you'll decide, yeah, okay. I naturally want to think of Krishna all the time, like we naturally think all the time of whatever we're convinced will fulfill us. And then Krishna says, maybe you don't even want to do that. Suppose you don't even want to do that. There's a lot of people in today's very secular society who don't even want to do any work for the Lord. I know Bill Gates said, why should I go to church? I can do more good for the world with my money on a Sunday than I can by worshiping the Lord. Now you might say, well, that's very arrogant. But most people think that way. Most people think, I can do more good for myself and others than by going to a place of worship. I mean, if we consider all the population of Durban and what percentage have spent part of their time on the weekend in worship of the Lord, I'm sure it's a small percentage, yes. So most people, they're not even willing to do some... They're not even willing to do some basic work for the Lord. So, then Krishna gives another instruction. He says, if you're not willing to do that, sarva karma palatyagam. He says, all the results of your work you should give up. Sarva means all, karma means work, pala means fruit, tyaga means renounce. Do work, but give the enjoyment of what you do to somebody else. Don't keep the fruits of your work for yourself. And he says, try to be self-situated. Be happy inside. Find your happiness inside instead of in the results of your work. Now, it used to be, not that long ago in human society, it wasn't that long ago, when most people got married at a young age. 20 years ago, 30 years ago. Most people, by the time they were 20, 25, were married. Now, one of the things that happens when you're married is you give at least some of the fruits of your work to somebody else. You don't just keep them all for yourself. This concept of single life, where a person is single and works and keeps all the results of their work for themselves, is a very new phenomenon in human society. And there are always some people in that situation for various reasons. But to have a large portion of a society like that is very unusual. At least you're giving to your wife part of what you earned. You're sharing your food with your husband. You weren't cooking just for yourself. You weren't working just for yourself. You weren't cleaning just for yourself. And this concept that one should take the fruits of what one does and one should give it away. So why is Krishna encouraging? If you can't do anything spiritual, if you're not interested in anything spiritual, then do that. Share. Sacrifice. Give. So why is he encouraging that? Because what happens when you give away the fruits of what you do is you start to become detached. The frantic moving of the mind, I'm going to get this, I'm going to get this, and I don't want this, and I'm going to get this, calms down when you know that you're not going to get it anyway, you're going to give it away. And when the mind calms down and becomes peaceful, it comes to what's called sattva-guna. It comes to the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness, you start having an experience of peace and joy, in which you start becoming interested in the spiritual. So it's a stepping stone to the spiritual. So for people in general that aren't interested in religion, aren't interested in God, aren't interested in anything spiritual, they should be encouraged in giving away the fruits of their work. Then Krishna says, if you can't do that, if you don't want to give away the fruits of your work, then cultivate knowledge. Study philosophy. Study about the meaning of life. But again, many people may not do that either. You know, nowadays, how many people study philosophy? Even the great literature of the world is not being studied. It's all been replaced with, you know, 2-minute videos. He says, better than knowledge is meditation. Why? Because meditation gives you a very fast, direct experience of the divine, which again incites that desire. But then he says, better than meditation is giving up the fruits of action, which he'd already said. He said, give up the fruits of action. If you can't do that, cultivate knowledge. If you can't, better than knowledge, he said, is meditation. But better than that, he said, is what I already said. Do some sacrifice. Give up the fruits of your action. Don't work just for yourself. Why? He says, karma pala tyagas tvacha chantir anantaram. What happens at the end of giving away what you've earned, giving away what you've worked for. We're not just talking about money, we're talking about you cook a meal, you give it away. You understand? Make something beautiful, you give it away. Share with others. He says, at the end of doing that will come peace of mind. And when the mind is peaceful, what happens, as Krishna will explain later in the Bhagavad Gita, As soon as the mind is peaceful, then one can awaken to realize the soul and to realize God. But that's a very indirect process. Then Krishna has many verses where he talks about the symptoms of peace. And these verses are important because for those of us who want to work for the Lord, or those of us who want to engage in a spiritual process, or even those of us who simply want to advance in inner peace and joy, these are the keys. People ask all the time, how do I know whether or not Krishna is pleased with me? How do I know whether or not the Lord is pleased with me? How do I know whether I have a relationship with him? And he's telling us here. He said, don't be envious, be a kind friend to everyone. Anyone who says, I'm a spiritual person, I'm a religious person, and they're not nice to other people, it's incompatible. Don't be envious, be a kind friend to everyone. Don't think that you're a proprietor. Don't think this is my house, my car, my clothes, my money, my family. We come with nothing, we leave with nothing. Free from false ego. False ego is I'm the greatest, I'm the doer. Equal in both happiness and distress. That means finding happiness within. Tolerant, satisfied, self-controlled. These are the symptoms of one who's attained. He by whom no one is put into difficulty, who is not disturbed by anyone, equal in happiness and distress, fear and anxiety, not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. So if we want to find the supreme goal of life, the best way to do that is to fix our mind upon the supreme person. From the beginning, immediately. And if we can't fix our mind in the Supreme Person, then we should put ourselves into a circumstance where we're likely to have an experience of God, which will then give us the desire to always think of the Lord. And if we're not willing to do that, at least we should cultivate goodness and peace and equanimity and detachment, which may also give us a chance to experience God. And as we experience God, we will want him, and then we will want to experience him some more, and then we will want him some more, and then we will experience him some more, and then we will want him some more, and pretty soon we will totally absorb in him, and then we will find that everything we desire, everything we didn't even know that we desired, beyond our desires, beyond our expectations, because he is complete and full, is all fulfilled. So we have a little bit of time if anybody has any questions on anything in this chapter. Any questions at all? Any comments at all? Anything, chapter 12. Yes. He says what? Oh, getting the mic. Well, in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yam yam bhavi smaram bhavam tvaja chante kalevaram tam tam yaveti kanteya sadatad bhava bhavita. Whatever we think about, we become. And the next verse he says, in 8:7, he says, Mam anusmaram yujicha. So, my dear Arjuna, while you're on the battlefield fighting this war, think of me. Now, can you think of very many kinds of jobs that would require more concentration than being on a battlefield fighting war?
I mean, if people are trying to kill me, and I'm trying to keep from getting killed, and I'm trying to kill the enemy on the battlefield, wouldn't that require intense concentration? In fact, Arjuna was famous for having this intense concentration. Does everybody know the story of Arjuna and the test of the bird? Remember that story? So Arjuna had his teacher gave the students an exam. A lot of students right now in South Africa are preparing for exams. But probably the exams that you take here are just filling in little circles on a piece of paper. Right? So the exams they gave in good schools before the Industrial Revolution ruined education in the world, the kind of exams that they gave were practical exams. So Drona took all his students outside and he said, okay, I've taken a toy bird and I've hung it up in a tree. I want all of you to come and take your arrows and aim it like you're going to hit the eye of the bird. So one of his students comes out and stands there. Okay, what do you see? Oh, Gurudev, I see your lotus feet. I see your smiling face, the sky, the tree, the bird, the bird's eye. Very nice, very nice. Okay, next. Aim. What do you see? Oh, Gurudev, I see the tree, the bird, the eye, and your mercy everywhere. Okay, fine. Next. Aim. Okay, what do you see? Tree and the bird. Arjuna, what do you see? The bird's eye. So Arjuna had that focus that he only saw the bird's eye. And yet, Krishna said to him, Mam anusmaram yujata. Think of me while you fight. So a lot of the key for this is in this chapter. In text 2. Krishna clearly says, this is the purport, Krishna clearly says that he who concentrates upon his personal form and who worships him with faith and devotion is to be understood most perfect in yoga. For one in such Krishna consciousness, there are no material activities because everything is done for Krishna. A pure devotee is constantly engaged. Sometimes he chants, sometimes he hears or reads books about Krishna, or sometimes he cooks for sun, or goes to the marketplace to purchase food for Krishna, or sometimes he washes the temple or the dishes. Whatever he does not let a single moment pass without devoting his activities to Krishna. Such action is in full samadhi. Now we think of samadhi as it involves pratyahara first, all your senses are withdrawn. You're in such a trance, you don't even hear anything, like Shamaka Rishi couldn't hear Parikrit. Shiva didn't see Daksha. And Prabhupada here is saying that when you drive to the marketplace, you're in samadhi. He says when you cook for Krishna, you're in samadhi. How do you do that? You know, like... I mean, do you really want the driver of your car to be in samadhi? So what kind of samadhi is he talking about? The samadhi he's talking about is not that kind of Ashtanga Yoga samadhi, which is very mechanical. It's a samadhi of love. And when you have a samadhi of love, you can think about someone or something no matter what you're busy doing. We all have this experience. When people are first in love, when people first have some, you know, love with some romantic partner, they think of that romantic partner all the time. Any of you who've ever been in love? You think of that romantic partner all the time. While you're taking a mathematics test, while you're driving your car, while you're cooking, all the time. Now, that doesn't last.
10 years after you've married them, then it's not like that. But it's some idea. Or when you have a baby, you know, when you have, especially the first baby, but when you have a baby, you're thinking of that baby constantly. If you put the baby down to sleep and you go in the next room, it's a baby, okay, it's a baby, okay, it's a baby, okay. Right? Or even, you know, a thing. You buy a new phone, you might think about it constantly. Right? Or if you're planning a trip, you know, you're going to go someplace. You go someplace you really want to go tomorrow. And so you're just thinking about it constantly. So we don't know how to do this. If we try to say, I'm going to think of Krishna mechanically, then we're, how do I do that? But if we have the desire, then we don't have to think of how to do it. I mean, the yogis were complaining that they couldn't stop thinking of Krishna. How can we be equal to friends and enemies?
Hare
and
Krishna, have a comment.
Yes!
For the Mataji who cannot attend to mind to Krishna during the day, at night, just before she falls asleep, she can attend to mind to Krishna. Throughout the sleep, she will be attached to Krishna, and when she gets up, she gets attached
to Krishna. There you go. Good suggestion.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I like this question because this question is very much about the class. We may even have had a spiritual experience where we have a lot of anarchists that slow our progress, and it seems that I'm not making any progress. What should I do? We have to expect, just like, again, the child learning how to walk. The child stands up. It stands up for a couple seconds, and he gets all excited, and then what happens to the child? Boom. And then again stands up for a few seconds. For quite a while, is the child more vertical or horizontal? Horizontal, right? I mean, it's a long time, and most children go through a plateau. They may have months where they just take 2 steps a day. And then at a certain point, they're going to take 8 steps, they're going to take 12 steps. So the child just taking 2 steps a day may feel, I'm not making any progress at all. That's not a fact. Progress is not always like this. Sometimes it's like this. Now, we're individuals and we're persons. If we're not making any progress over a long period of time, then we have to look at how we're going to deal with an artist. I just gave a, what is it? 6 or 8 hour seminar on this very topic, which I don't think I have time to get into in the next 2 minutes. But I would suggest that you study Raghunathas Goswami's Manishiksha because he really explains how to deal with this problem. Excellent, excellent question. What's the difference between religion and spirituality? Well, Krishna explains that nicely in 1866. He says, Sarva Dharma Pritcha Jaham Lekam Sharnam Rajaham Tom Sarva Pabhya Yogokshi Shamamasa Jaham. Surrender to the Lord and love of the Lord is spirituality. Religion is some particular set of rituals and beliefs that are supposed to bring you to spirituality. If it's a bona fide religion and you follow it properly, you should achieve spirituality. A religion is a temporary time, place, and circumstance means to help people attain spirituality, which is eternal. Even please don't think that a million years ago that the process of bhakti yoga looked exactly the way it looks like today. These externals are changing according to the time, place, and circumstances. The different religion is a certain series of beliefs and rituals given by spiritual teachers according to the scripture that is meant to bring out spirituality. It's meant to bring out an experience of God, a relationship with God. How can we be equal to friends and enemies, and why do you stay away from contaminating association? Equal to friends and enemies means you wish well for everybody. It doesn't mean you have to live with everybody. It doesn't mean you have to invite everybody to lunch. But it means you don't wish any harm to anybody. You don't wish harm for the people who harm you and good for the people who do good for you. You wish good to everybody and harm to no one. That doesn't mean you go around hugging tigers. You know, you wish the tigers well, but you're not going to sleep with them. I'm not sure how this question came from this class. Why is men always playing for lust when women want the pleasure and desire? I don't know why men are always playing. I don't think men are always playing for lust. Some people only blame women for lust. Probably depends where you are, who you're talking to. Some people think that women are totally responsible for lust. Actually, we're all responsible for lust. Every conditioned soul. And we had a whole talk on this morning in the Phoenix Temple in New Jagannathpuri. That was our whole, we had an hour and a half talk simply on how to become free from lust and how to develop our real spiritual pleasure with the divine. And I think they made a video of it, so whoever asked this question, I suggest you contact them at the Phoenix Temple and ask them, because that was another, wasn't really the subject of this class, but that's a whole other class. So I want to thank you very much. Do you have a question also? Yes? Okay.
Hi, Krishna. You see that Krishna suggests an internal approach.
Yes.
And then he suggests an external approach.
Mm.
Now, we all mostly fall under the external approach. Somehow, the internal affects the external. When our mind disturbs us, we go through troubling situations, and we find that the internal sometimes pushes one away. So how can we come to the point we're not letting the internal negatively affect the external, but rather bring the external to the internal?
You know, all these things are related. Prabhupada talks about thinking, feeling, and willing of the mind. Our thoughts influence our emotions and behaviors. Our emotions influence our thoughts and behaviors. Our behaviors influences our thoughts and our emotions. So yes, first Krishna says, just do the internal, and pretty much the external will take care of itself, is what he's saying. He's saying, if you're always meditating on me, you're always in love with me, your consciousness is absorbed with me, that's all you need to do. If you have the right consciousness and you have the right mentality, you'll automatically have the right behavior. Then he says, if you can't immediately function on the internal level, then function on the external. First he talks about functioning on a mixed internal-external. For first he says, do the internal. Always think of me, and by the way, I really like that you asked this question. Always think of me, fix your consciousness on me without any deviation, and that's it. You won't need to do anything else. Like Rupa Goswami says, if you always think of the Lord and never forget Him, then everything else will fall into place. You won't need a religion. It won't be necessary. You won't need to be told, well, first you should do this, and you should do this like this, and you should hold your hand like this. You won't need to be told to do that. Because what you should do, as Prabhupada says, will automatically manifest by the grace of the Lord. You'll just know what to do. He says, if you can't do that, then do this Abhyas Yoga. Abhyas Yoga is both internal and external. Activities is both of the body and of the mind. And the beginning of Abhyas Yoga or Sadhana Bhakti is to always think of Krishna. That's the beginning. So when Krishna is saying do external activities, he's not saying exclusively so. Because Abhyas Yoga is primarily a cultivation of the mind, but it's helping the cultivation of the mind by doing certain things. Get up early, take a bath, go in the temple, offer your obeisances to the deities, say these prayers. By doing these things with your body and your voice, etc., it will help spark the internal. But while you're going through this, yes, there's going to be kind of a conflict. That because your mind isn't fixed on Krishna, your mind that's not fixed may push you to have behaviors that are not fixed. You know, you're going to be going through what Prabhupada calls as a hard struggle with determination. When you're trying to get your body, your mind, and your speech all in sync on the Lord, and what do you do to be fixed before you're fixed? Tolerate that you're not fixed. I'm sorry. There's no other answer for that. It's like, what should the child do about the fact that they're falling down all the time before they can walk? Tolerate it. If the child says, what can I do to be able to just get up and run as if I was a baby giraffe? You say, sorry, you know, you're not a baby giraffe, you're a baby human, and you're going to have to practice, and you're going to probably spend several months of mostly failing. So don't get discouraged by the failures. Basically, tolerate the failures. That's why it's called practice yoga, abhyas yoga. What does that mean? It means you just keep practicing and you fail most of the time. And gradually, 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 your success starts to outnumber your failures. And then there's usually some big jumps of progress. Like a child will be doing 2 steps a day for maybe 4 months, and then all of a sudden they're doing 8 steps, and maybe the next day they're doing 12. And maybe a week later they're walking. But even then they're not walking very well, you know, they have this kind of funny walk. Right? And if you even see the child, once you say they're walking, you know, well, sort of. We were at one temple recently where there was this child who just mastered the walking business. And she kept falling onto the people in the temple room. She would walk, and she had to walk like this. You know, the walking, you see, right? Most of you haven't seen kids sometimes walk, so I don't know. But they kind of walk with their hips. You know, they kind of have this hip walk, and they're holding out their hands like they're a tightrope walker. And all of their energy is into walking. You know, they can't focus. As soon as they go to pick something up, they fall. Because they can't take their, you know, and they're leaning on people and stuff like that. But gradually, I mean, we all know how to walk now, right? It does work. It does work. So don't be discouraged. Just pick yourself up, just like we all learned how to walk, do it again. Pick yourself up and say, okay, now I'm going to think about Krishna. And the child is not discouraged by their failures. If you watch children learning how to walk, they don't even notice their failures. They really don't. A child learning how to walk is not conscious of his or her failures. They only celebrate their successes. Otherwise, none of us will learn how to walk, frankly. And the failures are painful. The kids get bruises. You see a lot of kids in that stage, you know, their forehead has bruises, their rear has bruises, because they're always hitting things. And the other people around also only concentrate on the successes. Can we do this for each other? That would be really nice. You know, when a child's learning how to walk, the mother and father don't say, oh yeah, well that was a couple seconds. You know, I'll do it for 5 minutes and then I'll call grandma. They don't do that. They immediately call grandma when it's 5 seconds, right? She stood up for 2 seconds and they get all excited. And this is what we should do for each other. Wow, we had some success today. So celebrate the success even if it's just 2 minutes. It will come to a point when we're 50% in the mode of goodness, Prabhupada says, where the struggle, hard struggle with determination is over. So there does come a point with the child learning how to walk where they're still not an expert walker, but they can walk. They're not falling down all the time. They're not bumping into things all the time. They're still a little awkward. Their gait's still a little awkward and cute. It's not fluid. They haven't quite mastered it, but they're functional. So we do reach a point where the hard struggle is over. We are functional. We're still awkward. We're still not done, but we're functional. And we really don't have that problem anymore. Okay? Celebrate, celebrate. Even if it's 2 seconds. 2 seconds a day I thought of Krishna. One mantra I focused on Krishna. Celebrate that. And treat others like that. We tend to be very harsh with people, I think, many times now. At least I do. And just see their faults. Is that all right? Anybody else? So thank you very much.